Yes, my name is Pete, and I am from Until the Ribbon Breaks.
I am James from Until the Ribbon Breaks also.
And I am Elliot, and I'm from Until the Ribbon Breaks. Let's see, we've got Cardiff. See, everybody's Wales. They're from Wales. No, you're from Cardiff. It's different.
That it's is actually different. Very true.
I'm being funny, but I know it's true.
Yeah. Okay, I can talk about the birth of why. Why Until the Ribbon Breaks? I was in a spot of bother, really. I was writing and producing for other artists and not really enjoying it. I had kind of given up on the idea of being an artiste myself. I just wasn't sure I enjoyed it anymore, and I thought that writing and producing for other people would be where I go. So I did that for a while, and it's okay, and sometimes it's really good, and sometimes it's really bad. And that just wasn't for me, really, in the end. So I kind of basically sat down and thought, well, I either quit, not quit, you can never quit music, but quit the idea of music as what would be my kind of daily bread. And sat down and thought about that and thought, well, do you know what, I have to find a way that I can still do it, but still make it interesting and push some kind of boundary, even if it's a personal boundary, and incorporate film into it as well. Because it was, for me, it was always either make something in film or make something in music. And so the idea I had was that to do both in some way, and that's how Until the Ribbon Breaks was formed. I never actually went to university. I never turned up. Like, I got the software to make the films and the music and then just did it at home. The degree bit is rubbish.
This perception of the in the box, right? And producing something in the box and then having to take it out of the box. But it does get to the point where, you know, anybody can have Ableton. Anybody can have, you know, Adobe Premiere. Anybody can have all those tools. But it takes a whole different mindset to take those tools and then turn them into a series of songs that interconnect and tell a narrative.
I think the key is not using them properly is the key. Yeah. Not using any of those tools like you should.
You can't make a mixtape anymore. In the world we live in, you could. But instead, you're making a playlist. When you were making the record, and even when you play live, and how do you manage to get into their head what we know? And what it really means to make a mix.
I mean, I suppose the beauty of making a mixtape on cassette for me was that, and I think what's missing about playlists is the idea that you had something to do with it, and it wasn't
the computer doing it for
you. Yeah, and you had to sit and hover above and time when you took your finger off play and record.
And you had to queue up a record, or you had to pick where it was.
Yeah, and just that care and attention means it's different than curating a Spotify playlist where you just drag and drop. But I suppose, how do we recreate that feeling live? I think by simply ordering the set in the right way to create the same energy that you would want a cassette mixtape to ebb and flow, and also by filling the gaps of silence with like transitional music so that you feel like it's constantly moving.
So that's a really interesting road. If I'm getting what I hear on your record right, that's what you spent a ton of time thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, I like the sound of silence on a record is not something I've ever really liked. Like, I'll try and fill that space with
ambient things.
Yeah, adding tape hiss and record crackle and some kind of scratchy, just a sense that it's got, you can touch it. There's that sense. It's the same as film versus digital. You know, that sense that you can feel the film when you watch the film. And I think that's why we try and put texture, I guess, is what I'm saying.
In algorithms, in MP3s and all that stuff. Not being old school. Not saying we're old, you know, old fogies. But that you think that that's missing and that this is filling a blank for them?
I mean, I would never be as presumptuous as to say that it is, but I guess on our end of it, we definitely try and... I think there's a lot of nostalgia on the record, and maybe there's a subconscious leaning in people to want to go back to something, maybe.
And maybe they don't even know what that something is because they didn't even ever experience it. If you got somebody 22 years old, they've never experienced what we're talking about as you're playing it live.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good question for James because he actually makes those transitions.
I think our live show is really interesting. And everything we just acknowledged with kind of how people might tap in or be drawn to that part of the aesthetic or the feeling that they might get from our music. It's proven in the different kinds of people that you see at our shows, actually. The demographic, if you like, is very wide. And I think that proves exactly what you were saying. And I like to think that we help augment that with the way that we present the music on stage. In terms of that feeling, a lot of the similar processes that we might use in the studio are just taken and translated to a live situation. So even though we are playing instruments, we've got guitars and a real drum set, and a trumpet and a real kind of acoustic sounding sound sources. We are also taking electronics from the record or samples that we're reprogramming. So a lot of the album, a lot of that kind of crust and grain that you were talking about, a lot of that comes from sampling. And many samples on the record we use live in exactly the same way as we would have done when we were sat in the studio creating or programming on an MPC. So we'll actually re-perform those samples. But because we're doing it in a live sense, we can add to that, or we can manipulate it, we can change it, we can make it unique for that one performance and perform it in a certain way. And Elliot's drum set is layered up with some of those electronics from the studio. But of course, in a live environment, there are rules that wouldn't apply in the studio. So those rules are things that we would go through, and like the rules with kick drums, for example, and how much bass you would have in the kick drum versus how much sub you want on the bass, and those kind of balancing things.
You're not coming there to rock!
And I think what's interesting is that our kind of constant push is actually to meet in the middle. I love going to see a band that always feels like it's on the edge of falling over. I love that sense. I love the idea of rock and roll, but I also want us to recreate the kind of how much we put into the record. I want that to be recreated live, but I also want it to feel like it could fall over any minute. So is that trying to get to that middle ground has been our constant push, I think.
You've got yourself a really good group of human beings that are surrounding you in all of this. And again, it's not the reason you are where you are, but it certainly doesn't hurt that when you opened for that young woman from New Zealand who sort of kind of is also represented by the people who represent you. But the fact is that, again, she came out of nowhere with a different sound. So one of the things that I read is that when you're going to take this to the next level, one of the things you're talking about next is working with different female vocalists. Now, I'm going to go down this road in a more scary way. You know that the producers, right, and whether it is an RAC, they say, okay, well, you know what? We're going to find some interesting male and female vocalists, and then we're going to add value to it, and we're going to do things. So when you're thinking about, so what you've done here, we've got it out there. You are representing a mixtape, and that's what this project has been. When you think about the next project and you say, okay, we're going to, you know, I'd love to work with Hannah, I'd love to do that. Have you thought about how you're going to, and I say this in the way that I mean it, how you're going to own it, how it's going to become an Until the Ribbon Breaks version of things that people admittedly have done a lot and is a trend. But I think that what happens is it is indeed a trend that people sometimes buy the record, not for Ronson, but because of all the other human beings that have been put on the record. So have you thought about that? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, I think it comes down to one word, which is style, really. I think, you know, you will always know if, I don't know, Bret Easton Ellis has written something, whether it's for a screenplay or it's his own book, because he brings so much of him to
it. And you're doing this. You're like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's, so I think, or, you know, a David Cronenberg or something. It doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter what the screenplay was necessarily. I mean, you'd have to like it, but you would know instinctively that he had made it. Oh, like a massive
attack. So really what you're saying, and again, as somebody who is a writer, it's what you're doing, and again, it's hard to get people to understand, and they don't have to. The good news is if the music provides, they don't really have to know what we're talking about, but it's about the narrative.
Yeah, a thread, some glue, and bringing your own identity to whatever it is you're doing and whoever it is you're collaborating with. I mean, in my mind, I suppose, whoever we collaborated with vocally, I'd still be writing the song, you know, with them or without them. So that in itself is some glue, and we would be producing it. So we'd always be bringing ourselves to the table, whoever else was happening to sit at it.
Going from dark, rainy Cardiff to sunshiny times and places. So really, it's all been publicized as he went from the dark places to the sunshiny place. I don't think that was what happened. I think he just went from another dark place to a different dark place that has better weather. Give it up. Tell me. What
100%
do you think?
Correct.
Yeah.
It's not like I moved to LA and got a surfboard and a
let's
you know,
go surfing now. Yeah.
We still have an incredibly musky, dark studio. It's even darker than the one I had in rainy, dark Wales, you know. It's that you bring yourself wherever you go, you know, that's the thing.
So playing a South by Southwest and doing what you're doing, are you getting the attention? Are people into it, or are they, you know, do you have to do the excuse me, I'm trying to do a show here thing, or has it been pretty good?
I think we kind of hit our first song is a song called 2025, and it I think it just hits it hits all areas of what we do, and it's loud, it's fairly abrasive, and I think it just
it gets the attention.
It's the musical version of saying hi everyone, we're here. I think it does it. Generally, we haven't had to say, do the whole can you shut up thing. And our music's just fairly loud, you know. I think it does it for us, really.
What I've done is I've invented a musical sandwich. And what a musical sandwich is two of your songs is the bread, and then songs by anybody else in between.